From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat. It's Idaho Matters. It's no secret our world is getting brighter, especially at night, as more artificial light is added to our environment. And that expanding brightness is having an effect, often a negative ecological impact on wildlife. A recent Boise State University study, which is actually going on now, is looking at how bats react to artificial light in Grand Teton National Park and how we humans need to better understand how our light footprint is affecting the animal world. Here to tell us more is Professor Jesse Barber with Boise State's Department of Biological Sciences. Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Well, thanks for having me on.
So you're actually in Grand Teton National Park, right? Where are you at?
I'm in the headquarters of the Park Service in Moose.
In Moose. That's awesome.
Moose Wayne.
Nice. Tell us about this study. Where did the idea come from?
Well, so I've been working with bats in Grand Teton for a long time. And there's some work that came out of Europe, out of Spilestra's lab, that showed that red light can mitigate the costs of light pollution for bats. And so we wanted to implement that at scale in a real protected area. And so about 5 years ago, we changed all 32 streetlights in Coulter Bay, which is the largest visitor center in the park, to these experimental lights that let us switch back and forth from red to white.
Wow.
And when we've been studying both bats and insects and how they respond to red light. And the basic punchline of what we're finding is that bats that avoid lights, and there are a lot of bats that are like this, that when it's too bright, they don't want anything to do with that habitat, with that piece of land. But when it's red, they come back and hunt there. And for other lights, or other bats rather, that are attracted to lights, when it's red, they do not come to the lights as often. And that's almost certainly because insects also don't come to red light anywhere near as much as white.
Well, okay, so, and that's important because you looked at moths, or looking at moths and at bats, and you trapped both moths and then you recorded bat calls. I'm going to play a bat call just so we can hear it, so we can hear what it sounds like. Let's take a listen. Okay, tell me about what you recorded and what we're hearing.
So those are recordings of bats attacking insects. So what we do is we put microphones out, ultrasonic microphones, around the study area and then record the bats. And so we can tell which species it is by the echolocation call that it's screaming out into the night. And as you were hearing there, you can tell if they're hunting prey, because as a bat closes in on its insect prey, it speeds up the rate of sonar calls and you get that buzz at the end.
Wow. Okay. So it's amazing that you can figure all this out with recordings, and then you're trapping moths, if I am reading this right.
Exactly right. Yep. So we use an ultraviolet bucket trap, it's called, which lures the moths into the trap using the same mechanism that lures them to streetlights. And we actually don't really know why insects are attracted to lights. One leading theory is that they use the moon as navigation. And if you have a simple rule of don't fly too high, but keep the moon off to one side, you can fly a straight line. But if you bring the moon down to Earth, you're going to go to it. And, you know, there's no solid evidence for this idea, but it something is really drawing moths to lights. And so we trap them with the UV light, and then we identify them to species. And we're trying to understand what's going on with the trends of insects. So something you might have heard, and your listeners, is that insects appear to be declining globally. And there's lots of possible reasons. And one of the leading causes that in my mind, is light pollution.
Wow. We're speaking with Boise State professor Jesse Barber about a study on how artificial light at night is affecting species like bats. So if I'm hearing you right, you're studying moths, you're studying bats. and you're using light and changes in light and red light to figure out what they do and how they do it. What, now you're not done yet, but you have found that different bats react differently to different lights.
Yeah. I mean, and basically I think the simplest way to think about it is restoring the night sky, that by using light wavelengths that bats and insects can barely perceive, but that we can see quite well, we can create darkness for these animals, for these wildlife. And then they can return to the behaviors that they have evolved to do in darkness. And that's, you know, really the way that we can reconcile the growing human population and footprint with the natural world is coexistence. Try to create landscapes that both wildlife and people can persist in.
Well, I think it's fascinating when you talk about this could be artificial light, could be a big reason why insects are disappearing. That's not the only effect that artificial light has on the animal world. It has a big impact.
Yeah, there's all kinds of good evidence now of the things that light pollution can do to wildlife, from, you know, changing animal distributions to behaviors interfering with reproduction. And it messes with circadian clocks, the timing of any animal's diurnal or daily cycle. And as that we are animals, light also disrupts our daily cycles. And there's a lot of human health implications from artificial light at night. And so some of these mitigations, like changing the color of lights, can benefit people as well. Because blue light is what entrains our circadian clock, for instance. And so part of this work is that we also are surveying visitors to Grand Teton National Park to see what do they think about these unusual lighting schemes, and does it seem to fit with their schema of what a national park should be, and what do they think about these approaches to protect wildlife. And of the people we've surveyed, everyone is strongly in favor of these mitigations.
Interesting. Okay, and the study is still going on, right? And you've got a lot of people involved in this who are helping you out. What's next? How long will the study last? And then what do you do with all that data?
Yeah, so we've been working on this Coulter Bay project where these 32 streetlights are changed for about 4 years now, and we're right in the process of getting those papers published, both the social science on the visitor surveys and the wildlife stuff. But we're also, we just launched a massive new study in the park. We're at 15 sites spread all the way from the very north to the south in sites that have never received any lighting. We have erected streetlights that have four different lighting options to narrow down on what the best options are for lots of different kinds of insects. So we have a couple of different kinds of amber lighting and the red lighting that we installed in Coulter Bay. And so this is an ongoing project to try and provide the national park system with guidance on what lights should be in place if we are to protect wildlife.
Wow, this is fascinating. We're going to have you back on to keep talking about this.
I'd love that.
I'd love it, too. We've been speaking with Boise State Professor Jesse Barber about a study on how artificial light at night affects species like bats. Thanks, Jesse.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.